the Tsangpo River Gorge in Tibet has been described as one of the most remote, sublime, and imposing places on Earth. It's the deepest river gorge in the world, 3 times deeper, 8 times steeper than the Grand Canyon. It's dotted with high waterfalls. It's been called the Mount Everest of rivers, but no kayaker has successfully made it down the Tsangpo alive until February of 2002. An international team of 7 kayakers made the journey, more than 60 Nepali Sherpa guides and porters carrying 2,500 pounds of food and gear, followed by land, climbing up and down and up and down the steep canyon walls. One journalist was with them, Peter Heller of Outside Magazine, who incidentally is an accomplished kayaker himself. He's written a book chronicling their journey. It's called Hail or High Water, Surviving Tibet's Tsangpo River. He joins us now from the studios of member station KCFR in Denver. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Tell us about this gorge, what it looks like, and what historically it's represented. It's said to be the inspiration for Lost Horizon.
Yeah, Shangri-La and Lost Horizon. More than any other river in the world, it kind of occupies both a mythic and a physical geography. It flows off Mount Kailash in far, far western Tibet, which is one of the most sacred mountains in the world to Hindu, Buddhist, and the native Bom religion of Tibet. And the river flows off this mountain and then runs almost 700 miles east across Tibet, gathering the runoff from the entire north slope of the Himalayas, including Everest. The river enters the gorge at about 9,800 foot elevation, and less than 150 river miles later, it emerges in the jungles of Assam, India, at 500 foot elevation. Mm-hmm. So it loses over 9,000 feet in, you know, less than 150 miles.
And not to put too fine a point on it, people have died trying to do what you did.
Yeah. Explorers since Victorian times have been trying to get into the gorge, and all their expeditions ended in, you know, either slavery or death or starvation. And what this guy Scott Lindgren did, who...
He was the head of your team.
Yeah, he was the head of the team, and he came from a much different background than all the explorers that had come before. You know, like the kayakers that had tried it before came from kind of an Ivy League canoe club, gentleman, competitive kayaker background. And this guy was kind of a badass skateboarder, and he was just a tough kid who became a kayaker and also became enamored of video and film and very quickly became an Emmy Award winner, a videographer of like extreme kayak expeditions. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he'd been eyeing the gorge for about 10 years and he realized that the only way to successfully paddle this thing that these guys had died on was to go in the middle of the Himalayan winter when all the tributaries were locked in ice and when the river would be at its lowest possible level so that the current would be much less powerful and maybe they'd have rock banks to work with. So that was the idea of going in the middle of the winter, but of course that presented its own challenges.
Yeah, but like freezing to death.
Yeah, and you know, they quickly realized that because the water was so much more powerful than they'd anticipated that they were, you know, constantly being, you know, submerged by waves. And so, you know, constantly getting these washes of cold. And even that water hitting their exposed faces would, you know, drain them of energy. So it was really a severe environment. And then the other challenge of going in the wintertime is that 44 miles into this upper gorge are 2 giant waterfalls that completely block all the way downriver. You can't go any further. And it's sheer cliff on either side. So the only thing you can do is kind of climb out of the gorge. And no one had ever done that in the middle of the winter. You have to climb over up into the high snows. Locals wouldn't go anywhere near these passes, you know, after mid-November. So that was kind of the crux of the expedition. You know, could we get out of the gorge in the middle of the Himalayan winter if we needed to?
And how high were these passes you're talking about?
Well, from the river, we were at about 7,000 feet when we climbed out of the gorge. And we had to climb up, you know, straight up, basically 5,000 feet up over this pass. And a lot of that, the last day was just exposed snow faces. And what ended up happening was we had a world-class mountaineer from Banff, Canada, named Andrew Shepherd, who cut steps with his ice axe, you know, up these faces. And then we had 5 Nepali Sherpas, and they came behind and they, you know, they deepened the steps with their ice axes. And then our train came behind them, the 45 porters by that time, and the kayakers basically climbed this thing with no hands, with their kayaks on their back, just up these tiny little toe holes cut into the face.
How many days were you on the river?
they paddled 14 days through the upper gorge. Mm-hmm. Then we climbed out over the high pass, the snow pass, and thankfully without incident, we had Sawang, our translator, did slip, and he had put duct tape around the toe of his boot because his boot sole was flapping. That's a really slick surface, so he came right out of one of these little footholds cup with the ice axe and plummeted, you know, hundreds of feet, and while everyone yelled, you know, turn over, he was on his back, and he dug a ski pole in, and he stopped himself just above, you know, 1,000-foot drop. That was the only incident, and, you know, and so we had, you know, several days of climbing up over that pass, and then we came down into the lower gorge, and that was, you know, the tropical gorge where there are hamlets, there's villagers, there's a couple of Buddhist hunting tribes that live there, the only ones on earth, and we were in the lower gorge. They'd initially planned to paddle a whole lot of the lower gorge, but we realized when we got there, when we first took a look at the river way down, there was a 300-foot bedrock scour on either side of the river. In other words, like a bathtub ring of sheer rock and no rocky bank due to a flood that had come through, which meant that the river was basically unpaddleable with no bank to get out on. So we were then a couple of weeks in the lower gorge, and altogether we were 37 days.
So that lower gorge, as I believe you call it, is still untested.
Yeah. The guys paddled a few miles of it, and it was so deceptive where it looked like, you know, just a simple Class 3 rapid of roller coastering waves that would be really easy to paddle through. They got on it and realized that they were just being torn downstream by this current, that they could barely hit the shore when they needed to. So they rightly, you know, after expending so much energy, being completely exhausted emotionally, physically, by the upper gorge, you know, Scott Lindgren decided to pull the plug there.
So there's still a little left to be done someday.
Yeah, there's a lot to be done. There's, you know, from the confluence of the Po Sang Po all the way down to India is something like, you know, 80 miles of river.
I think there are people who will understand risking one's life is often selfless and necessary if you're an astronaut or a soldier, a relief worker, as we see today. But to go kayaking?
Yeah. I understand the question. I think there's more to it. I think that whatever sort of endeavor human beings engage in, I think there's this sort of passion, you know, for some people just to push it, you know, to the ultimate limit and push the envelope to see what a human being is capable of. You know, there were two brothers on the trip, two twins from Vermont, Johnny and Willie Kern. Yeah, fraternal twins. They were 29 years old at the time. And their older brother, Chuck Kern, was fast becoming one of the leading kayakers in the world. And in 1997, the three of them went to run the Gunnison Gorge in Colorado. And the twins watched their brother miss a move and go into a rock sieve and die and drown, and, you know, right in front of them. And these guys who, you know, were really great paddlers, they decided to keep paddling, and they paddled in some ways for their brother. You know, they told me that they never hardly ever took a kayak stroke without thinking of Chuck. And so, you know, I think about the heart and courage that it took to come and do something like the Sang Po, where they had to sit in an eddy, you know, watch their brother and best friend paddle out into the current and try and make a move, you know, be the first one out, that the possibility of death there, you know, every minute, and kind of watch their brother do that and be supportive and be optimistic. I don't know.
Peter Heller, a contributing editor for Outside Magazine. You can find a selection from his book, Hell or High Water, Surviving Tibet's Sang Po River, at our website, npr.org.
Mr. Heller, thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.